recording. And,
hopefully we have a few more people show up.
Yeah.
Including our chair. Where's...
We were just at Senior Sam's. I saw him pull up, so he's probably distracted.
You're a medium past chair.
We have the vice chair.
No, I was there too.
We could get started.
Delicious. Yeah.
You say we have a quorum.
You are the vice chair.
Okay. So, let's get started. It is 17:35.
Oh, whoops. I meant to click.
We have a quorum. Yeah. And do we need to name everybody that's here, or go ahead and state our names, or we could wait until more people roll in?
Let's go. We got a quorum.
Okay, so.
Go.
Yeah, say your name.
Frank Betlejewski, Forest Lands Commission.
Nathan Lewis, Forest Lands Commission.
Nathan Lewis.
Luke Brandy, Forest Lands Commission.
I don't know what your voice sounds.
Yeah, there he is.
We thought you got lost.
Huh? Same voice.
Nathan Lewis is here.
All right.
Present.
Priscilla Franco, Forest Lands Commission, Vice Chair.
Kent Romney, Wildfire Safety Commission.
Martin Stadtmuller, President, Rogue Valley Mountain Bike Association.
Rick Long, Parks and Rec Commission.
Chris Chambers, Fire Department staff, city staff. That's a good reminder that we should say it for the record.
True.
That's probably just start.
Good name.
Yeah.
I think you're in for that.
So, take it away, Nate.
Okay. Approval of minutes. Anyone have any thoughts on that, Frank?
Those are actually minutes that says agenda, but you can ignore agenda.
Okay.
It's action minutes, definitely.
So I have a question about that. All right, so there's an error in the minutes under G, first, what is that, 5G. There was some back and forth about the date of the hike. April 11th is the wrong day.
Okay, so we should correct that.
But I think when we were talking about it, we were saying the 11th. So do we leave it as the wrong date because that's what we decided? And then after the meeting, we realized it was wrong?
No. Just
leave it wrong.
No.
Leave it.
It's amended. So then, if anyone looks, they can say that's.
I believe that the 18th is the Saturday after our April meeting. Do you have the calendar on your phone?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, because our April commission meeting is the 7th. Well, no, yeah, so the 11th would be, because our April commission meeting, no, you're right. The second Tuesday is the 14th.
Yes, right, because Wednesday is the first.
Right.
So it's the third Saturday follows the second Tuesday.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. The 18th, it is.
To say, okay, one more time, then a minute. So
it'll be April 18th, not the 11th.
In G.
The minutes were correct, but you're putting an addendum in to say that subsequent to the minutes, the dates would change to the 18th.
Yes. The minutes were correct, but subsequent to the addendum, it changed to the 18th.
Close enough.
Yes.
And we'll have plenty of you because you're going to talk about that again today. So we'll have it nice and clear.
Okay, one more time for the record. Subsequent to the meeting, I just want to get this part.
The date of the hike was changed to the 18th.
Perfect.
To April, right? April 18th.
April 18th.
Okay, got it.
Any other adjustments?
Minutes? No.
Good. Unless any objections, I declare the minutes to be approved. Boom. Moving on. Yeah. Public forum? We don't.
Yeah.
I have nothing to add to the public forum.
Okay. Cool. Nothing to add. Okay. Sweet. And the agenda looks good to folks who are on it?
The only adjustment to the agenda is that I do need to leave a little bit early, and I'm on for new business, and so if it looks like we're running out of time, maybe
yeah.
we could move that.
What time, do you want to get out of here?
I need to get out of here by 7.
7?
So.
Okay, I think yeah, looking at that, we should yeah. be fine. But if we start getting close, just remind us and we'll just skip ahead.
I can't remember. Is it on
the
minutes?
Okay.
Welcome. So.
We're announcing ourselves, newly arrived commissioners.
Shannon Downey.
And John Williams.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, William.
No, we're just getting to it. Ongoing business. Luke Brandy, public outreach hike.
Okay. Since last meeting, I think it was since last meeting, I reached out to AWTA Torsten and invited him to the April 18th hike because we will be hiking on the new Wonder Trail, and I thought it'd be a good opportunity to have AWTA, the big proponents and the builders of the trail, with us. We're involved with the approval process for that, both of us out there, and then April also is a great time, spectacular wildflowers, and I'm hoping that there'll be some good discussion about flower and plant response to the recent underburning that was done up there. So that's going to be the main thing, talking about trails. I'll probably get a little info about the water treatment plant. Just, I don't know, just a couple things we can say just about this is the future site of the water treatment plant and it affected the trail location. So that'll be my main points for that to make. And it sounds like Syl and Nate, you both said that you mm-hmm. could make that. Okay, great. The last trip only went about an hour. It was relatively informal. I was comfortable with it. It got off to a little bit of a weird start because my directions weren't great, but this one has a, the directions will be better for this because it just starts at a more, the spot will be right where we park, so that'll be good.
Yeah, do it at 9 a.m.?
Mm-hmm. Is that a good time, you think? 9? Would 10 be better?
No, I think 9
is okay.
fine.
Yep, I'll probably have a wildflower book. I'll talk to Chris, just getting, you know, how many acres were burned, what time of year was it, good, bad, you know, just maybe right. some pretty basic stuff. I don't think we're going to need to go into the details, but I do want to be prepared if we do get questions, more detailed questions.
Yeah, yeah.
And if so, if I don't know the answer, I'll either make something up or I'll just let them know, I'll contact them.
Ready.
Yeah.
Ready. Still April 11th.
It is the 18th. Yes.
And I think we talked about in getting the word out that in the at the March meeting would not be too late, but soon, very soon there after the March meeting, we should be getting the word out. And then, but there was some that you wanted to get closer. A little bit closer, so not to be too much in advance.
Yeah, what
so
I,
like with the newspapers, maybe mm-hmm. that's more in advance. But
what do we think? Like four to six weeks or something?
Yeah, I'll probably do like two, like twice. What I find is oftentimes, if you advertise something months ahead, people are like, "Oh, I want to do that,"
right?
And then they just like don't show up. Whereas if it's a little close, so I'll probably do one, you know, maybe around the March meeting, and then 2 weeks prior. So I'll probably do one.
Perfect.
That's good.
Like second week of March, and then last week of March, first week of April, yeah, end of March. And
when you say do one, excuse me, are you talking like through the paper?
Oh yeah, sorry, I should clarify that. Oh yeah, like an advertising campaign through. I did it last time on JPR's website and the newspaper. You know, just like free notices.
Yeah.
And then Nextdoor was pretty good
right.
for that. And I'll get it on the. Maybe get it on the city website or the parks Facebook or however that works.
Yeah, if you want any help on Facebook, I could do that for you.
Okay, great.
Yeah, you know, I was really frustrated when I tried to do it on JPR website. Well, maybe that was the time of year. There was so much going on that it just got buried.
Yeah.
You know? But so I don't know if how effective that is.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of social media, but I will say all 8 people that showed up at the last one heard about it through Nextdoor,
right.
and I was like getting direct responses, and I could reply, and so I thought that was a good way I could sell it to people pretty well that way.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas when you put it on the JPR news site, you're like, fingers crossed, someone actually reads this, and you don't really know.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So
it's great to have a couple of photos of the Wonder Trail
I could probably get those from Torsten, just because when you post stuff, you know, if you post it with a photo, it really gets his attention more.
Some, too. I have to go back and look to see if they would be good, but from the field trip that the city did with the public, it was very soon after the burn. I mean, it was that season.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think I might have a picture or two.
If not, I have pictures.
So should we do a little flyer? Do you want to have a draft of the written portion for next March? Bring that in, and then if some people have a couple of pictures, then one person will decide on kind of getting it finalized.
Yeah, especially if you...
And then we'll delegate who's going to send it to.
You're also going to, do social media, picture or something.
I'd say it's like a one-page flyer, basically. And then we could just attach it.
All right. So, and then since I'll be doing the social media posting, would John and Sil, would you send your pictures to me?
Mm-hmm.
And then we can go over it. I just want to have it all together, ready for the next meeting. And then do you have one potentially of that unit being burned?
Yeah.
Okay. Like an active fire, something torching off would be great too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we pictures. Like flames.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pictures that I have, it was because I was so astounded. I remember focusing on there were small pines that were completely burnt. They were completely red. But then, in the amount of time since the burn and between the hike, which I think was in early June, there was new growth coming out,
on the pines?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and so it was like, wow, go, maybe they're going to make it. And, it'll be just kind of interesting to kind of, if we can, locate some of those to go, well, let's see what happened to this. And,
great.
Of course, yeah, so,
whatever. Okay, great. Cool. So I'll look for pictures from you three, and I'll draft some language for the March meeting, and then we can go over it. And immediately following that, I'll post it, and then I'll plan on posting it, 2 weeks later, same time.
Awesome.
You're meeting at the trailhead?
Yeah, we'll be meeting at the near at the Ferry Pond trailhead, the Yellow Gate.
Cool.
Well, there's actually better parking at the swim reservoir in the area just below.
Before
just
you cross over,
three or four spots.
Okay,
and that's do it on the left side. That's where those people were last time.
It was okay. So I will say. The parking area above the...
Yeah, just above the swim reservoir.
Yeah.
You're not going to bus people up, are you?
No.
Okay.
Too much work. And we're really, the Wonder Trail, you've hiked it from... Yeah, it's pretty close. It splits off real close right in there. So.
How... Are you thinking of taking it to the junction with the original Wonder and then back down the road, or what do you think?
I think it'll be an outback. Yeah, and what I'm hoping is there's a lot of, discussions. I'm hoping the flowers are really going well and wildflower by April. What do you think? Too late? Too early?
I don't know if that spot's going to be that flowery.
Mm.
Didn't have a lot to start with. The other side where we've done more burning in years past, it can be pretty good.
Okay.
But I don't know. We go up there beforehand, maybe a couple weeks before, see what's.
Okay.
Yeah.
It may be a gamble.
It might not be like Kern River Canyon, but there'll be some flowers.
Yeah,
there's going to be some.
Calicordis and some of them, the fritillaria.
Kind of depends on flowers, springs. Because it is kind of north slope, a little bit sheltered.
All right.
Yeah.
So let's see. We should get Gardner's name stricken from the record, by the way.
Sorry, I did it already in the notes.
Okay, good.
Rick.
Sweet, you got
Lawn in there instead of...
Perfect.
Okay.
So Lithia Park Master's Plan update?
The update is there's nothing to update you on at this point.
Fair enough. Concise, we like that. All right, moving forward. Trails Master Plan update. How about that? No one... Was anyone sitting? That was a Gardner thing, and you. But then you took the high road. The lowest road.
I haven't really been in the loop on anything, and it seems like it's been a year and a half.
And that is that it was approved by City Council.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's an update.
And we can probably get rid of that from ongoing business.
Yes. At long last.
Goodbye, cruel world.
Although, we're going to be like reopening up here in a few, couple minutes.
Yeah. I ran into Jason earlier saying he won't make it tonight.
So yeah. The
subject of trails.
His daughter's birthday is tonight.
So. Yeah.
We are moving through this. All right, AFR.
All right, pretty quick. All right, I'll go on for maybe a little longer than my allotted time since no one else is here to say much.
I'll save the gavel.
So AFR specifically, we are still getting through our backlog of burning. Let me see if I can pull up our burn map, and I can show you what's been done and what still remains. Because there's going to be a couple burns going on tomorrow. Should have links.
Chris, is it my imagination, or are we just getting a lot more burning in this winter than we have in the past? I mean, I'm getting Nixle messages all the time.
It's about the same so far as last year.
Okay.
But if we went back like 5 years, it's a lot more than 4 or 5 years ago.
Is that the
how come I
change
click that and it doesn't show me the map? Locations. Well, let's see. Here we go. This is the right thing. So we do maintain this online map if anybody wants to know where the burns are that particular day. I'll show that. Okay. It's Forest Service GIS online map. I need to go in and I can. I have access to it, so I can switch on and off what's being burned. So blue has yet to be burned. Yellow is still in monitoring status, but it's been burned. Green is done. So tomorrow they're going to burn this right here, this blue, right above the freeway, private property off the end of Neal Creek Road.
Either side of the creek.
And it goes across Neal Creek. Yeah. 26 acres. Lomakase is going to be running that burn. And at the same time, on the other side of town, Grayback is going to be burning this. I think it's this section here on the Hoffman property, just west of town. Very strategic in terms of protecting both the watershed and the community. And so they've completed this upper part of it about a month ago. I'm just waiting for the conditions to get into the rest of it, which are going to be good tomorrow. Probably Thursday also, I just guess, looking at the weather.
These are all piles?
All piles, okay. Yep.
Chris, who's the owner of that property?
Hoffman family. They've owned it for, gosh, I don't know, 15 or 16 years now. They've done a lot of...
That extends into Ostrich Peak?
Yep, it is also Ostrich Peak. Ostrich Peak is actually right under here.
Okay.
Right at the top. So that's going to be pretty visible. Both will be visible depending on where you are tomorrow. But if you look at the big picture, scroll.
What's the kind of brighter green?
It's the same green, but it's just on the Forest Service side.
Oh, okay.
It's done also. So wherever you see blue, there's still burning to do. So although there is green and yellow, it's various stages of completion, there's still a lot of blue on the landscape. We have a big chunk in here in the watershed. I'll zoom in real quick for the AFR report. This is all AFR acres that we thinned last year, and the piles are ready to be burned. But as of yesterday, vehicles couldn't get past right here because of snow. So we're reaching out to help for help from the county or ODOT with some plowing to be able, or snow blowing, to be able to get through this section of the Loop Road back in the East Fork drainages, and then actually be able to get out to Winburn Ridge here to pick up these units. There's not a ton of snow out here, it just can't get through these dark corners back in here in the draws. Where snow builds up and doesn't melt out quickly.
What's the circle in the middle?
Owl? That is an owl core. Oh. Well, we cannot do work, so the buffer around a nest site. Still protecting, hoping to protect the site during fire, but we can't actually do work right there.
So that's what's in store for AFR. So tomorrow, and we haven't been burning in on federal land for a little while because we've been snowed out for the most part the last 2 or 3 weeks. Spring cold ones for everyone? For the rest of the class. Oh, she asked. We've been trying to pick up this unit. This is unit 43. It goes down towards Reeder. It's a hard one to get to. This 200 road out past the Horn Gap Trail has also been snowed in and super sloppy. Somebody from the Forest Service got stuck on the road the other day and had to get towed out. So there's some access issues in the watershed, just winter, normal winter stuff. But as soon as we can punch through here, we'll be able to pick up. This is a really big unit here, 176, 177 acres. And then these units out here are also another 112 acres on that one, and a couple small ones too to clean up. So there's a bunch of burning out there that still needs to be done. Another 184, so yeah, that's the chunk we need to get to.
That seems like a lot of acres.
Before summer. Yeah, a good day, you can pick up 100 to 200 acres, so you can punch a hole in it pretty quick if you get the right days. Right conditions. So that's where we are on the pile burning this winter, and that's really what's going on in AFR. Once a lot of that gets taken care of, Lomacotsi will move in the late spring, early summer, and start doing some more thinning. They've got about 800 acres laid out to do, that'll actually be pretty much the rest of all of the AFR footprint that needs work in the watershed proper, which is pretty cool. To think.
But Chris, will there not be underburning once
the trails?
Yeah.
There's okay. Definitely underburning. Okay. I could, let me see if I can manage that.
And then that area that you were talking about today, that's on the private land above the water line?
On private land. Oh, just a second, let me answer Shannon's question because I can turn on the underburning. So these are all underburn units that are in current burn plans. In blue or green is already burned.
Huh, nice.
So we need to tie in these areas here. Particular note this year is I really would like to get this unit done here, right by the city, just above, Wonder Trail actually passes through that, just above where you want to do the hike, which is just right down here. That's a really important one for keeping fire in, out of the watershed or out of the community, depending which way it's going. Right on that border with city land is just right here.
Before they start doing a lot of work on a water plant.
On a really important piece of infrastructure.
Yeah.
And do you foresee that being a better spring or fall?
Could go either way. Probably better in the spring. It holds moisture in there, so it's going to become a later spring burn, depending how spring goes, I guess. But I would say May.
Cool.
Maybe later May.
How long ago were the previous burns gone?
So this was 2 years ago, 4A. This was last year's burn, 2C. Those are recent. This was done. A combination of a part of it last year and a part of it the year before, 7, and then once you get up higher, these were all done 3 years ago, 28, another 28, 31.
Based on the fuels in that area, what's the reoccurrence ideal?
Anywhere from 5 to 15 or 20 years, depending on
a little bit of buffer.
Yeah. Yeah, 10, I don't know, I just say 10 to make the math easy, easy to think about. But the range in the fire history studies is 7 to 12, and then kind of lower elevations, and then as you move up, it can change up to 25 or 30. But these are more frequent, and as you get closer to town, it's more and more frequent, because there's a lot of Native American burning as you got closer to town.
But you're right that usually you do use an average 10
yeah.
when we're talking to the public.
Right, it's just easier to wrap your mind around that. There's a burn plan for that Hoffman property out here also. That's 450 acres of underburning that we'll also try to bite into on private land. So this is just federal land. Doesn't show city units or private units. So there's considerably more burning out there to do.
450 acres, that was at a whack?
No, that's just what's under plan. Oh. I don't think we could get that done in a day. That would be pretty ambitious.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you might be able to knock out 50 to 75 in a day, maybe 100. Got a really good day. But one day when we really start to build in more of this as burned blocks, the second entry burn
could
be several hundred acres. Helicopter ignition maybe. That'd be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. That'd be the way to get that done if you could burn that many acres. But we're not there yet. Got a little work to do. So that's the burn update. Just going on to my next agenda item, which is the city forest lands update. Let's see, lands management. A couple things are going on right now. Marty's been walking through the city ownership. He was out there for some other reason and noticed some trees dying, which they had been doing for a long time, but seemed like, maybe we're going through a pulse of mortality out there. And so we set up a map under the Ashland Forest Plan. None of it is actually mapped yet. Forest Plan.
Is it Doug Fir now?
Primarily Doug Fir. There is one patch of pine in a burn from a couple years ago. Let's see, it's on this map. But we're going to start entering in these locations where we're seeing mortality to get an idea of how widespread it is. Is it something that we've got to address and get some of those logs off the hill? Are they going to start accumulating a lot of fuel? So without spatial monitoring, it's hard to know. It's like, oh, there's a dead tree there. No, I saw one over there. But you know, how many are in between? How many are over there where we didn't look?
Coronavirus.
It is. Man, keep those trees away from each other.
Right.
Jeez. This is pretty slow to load. I don't know why it's this slow.
It's always slow in here. For some reason, the map will come up very quickly.
So the little blotches are dead trees. And then you can figure out the species, how many trees. I put this one on there. This is where the pines have been dying in a burn from a couple of years ago. You might even be able to see them on aerial imagery, although I think the imagery in here is not recent enough. You might be able to see them on Google Earth.
That's the Red Queen Manor's hatch, Joshua?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll see them if you go in there. Oh, 2000. Now, not in
1939. That's quite a bit of Doug Fir die-off while
on Bandersnatch, right? Marty mentioned that one, too. Yeah, so he's got notes and some scribbles and maybe some GPS points. He's going to enter all that into this online map format, and then you'll be able to see a lot more of these green blotches as they start showing up. I threw this one on there because I saw there's a big dead Doug Fir right off of Line View on your way up to Bandersnatch on the Waterline Trail. That one's going to need to be taken out because it's going to fall on the road one of these days. I've got Parks looking at that one.
Big limb, right?
Yeah, big. I was kind of surprised to see that one dead. Kind of sad, too. Big tree.
Mm-hmm. Say, Chris.
Dang it.
If these are all dead trees, could we make them red instead of green?
We could make them red.
Yeah.
We might be able to even change it in the layer here if it lets you...
Got a color selection? Cool.
Yeah, maybe not.
And Chris, are you saying you're getting some trees dying of beetle infestation after the area has been burned?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So that's relatively common?
It's. I think it's kind of an evolving thing. I think it's a really interesting discussion point in that, you know, we often say, well, we had fire-adapted forests, and these pines are adapted to fire, and they've been here forever, which is true of the really big trees, and some of them have been there for 500 years and have seen dozens of fires. But on the lower city ownership, it was all logged to build Ashland, and probably logged two or three times. So what we've got there are trees that are anywhere from,
saplings to some of the oldest trees in the lower ownership for maybe 100 years, and maybe 50 to 100 range of what you see when you walk out there, and trees that have not seen a fire. Interesting science going on with how trees respond. There's genetic programming in trees to respond to fire, but if they don't actually see the fire or feel the fire, then some of those traits aren't expressed to be resistant to fire. And one of those things is really interesting is insect response. Mm-hmm. Apparently, some research now is showing that trees that are repeatedly exposed to fire develop a stronger response to insects that are trying to kill them. And without fire, they don't develop quite that response. So these are trees we're treating like they've seen a bunch of fire, but they really haven't. And we're introducing a brand new disturbance to them that they don't know, though it is in their genes somewhere. But they have seen it, and they haven't experienced it as they've grown up into this size of tree now, or sometimes this size of tree. And we maybe put a little too much heat to them, which I'll take responsibility for. And that's that one where the pines are dying is our probably hottest burn yet. And with some scorch on the trees, and you know, maybe it's the combined global climate change, stress, drought, all that, and the beetles are just, they're everywhere, just waiting. I mean, they're killing trees on the Lithia hillside, left and right, and big trees, big pines. So they're out there, just waiting. So,
Chris, interesting, do you know offhand dilemma. Where that research came from, the interaction between the
Yeah, so I'll have to track it down again. Marty and I talked a bunch about it, and then kind of forgot about it.
The papers there. Yeah,
it is really interesting.
Oh, cool.
But there's a lot of dead dug fir I'm seeing, John, that's outside of burn areas, too.
Yeah.
So it suffered in the burn, but unless what, maybe flat-headed fir borer?
All flat-headed fir borer, pretty much.
So, and that's happening region-wide. It's out in the Applegate. It's if you look at the fir trees, like even going up Green Springs Highway, I'm Dead Indian, there's fir trees that are just croaking like glad to that. So.
Yeah, that's been ongoing since, I don't know, 90s, maybe. Had a strong pulse in the early 2000s with the drought, and then we did the helicopter thinning project on city lands in 2004. Actually, the vast majority of the volume were dead trees from flathead fir borer in that sale and restoration project. So we're starting to, seems like we're starting to inch towards some of that again. How much, I don't know. We're trying to figure that out, and whether it's worth trying to do something.
Chris, do the dug fir that die, do they retain their value a little better than pines?
And your pine gets blue stain almost instantly when by the time you see them starting to brown out, they're already stained, which that cuts the value in half or more.
Yeah.
Dug fir, yeah. You can. I think some of those trees that came out in that 2004 sale were probably almost 2 years dead.
Wow.
So just guess that it starts to get. And I remember being on the landing with Marty and the log scaler. We had to come out and look specifically at the defect that was being caused by the pouch fungus rot. Uh-huh. I forget what the official name is. And maybe some of you smart people know.
Called popcorn.
I don't know either. Pouch fungus, the little white ones that pop up on the outside.
Some of that's because the dug fir has that narrow band of sapwood that will rot, but you know, on a big tree, there's still a lot of heartwood, and that could be years that it could still be good.
I can never figure out though why you know we get half the value for blue stained logs, but they charge you more for blue stained boards, you know, at the lumber yard.
Right.
Why is that?
That's tricky though. A trick of the trade.
Yeah.
Seems like there are a lot of legacy pines that died maybe 2 years ago, 1 or 2 years ago. Some of the landings up by like Lamb Saddle on Forest Service.
Oh, at Lamb Saddle there was a die off.
Was that just one landing, or were there a couple?
It was just that one.
Just the one landing.
Yeah. A couple above Toothpick Trail.
Yeah.
And that area.
Okay.
Some of those had some scorch on them from pile burning and some fire that crept around them. Mm-hmm. The others, they were all just like right on the edge. Mm-hmm. They've been
and a lot of stress for a lot of years, many, many years, decades.
But did the surrounding pines, like, are they doing okay, the ones that weren't? Like, or did that create like a beetle event that spread?
It didn't really spread beyond that, that I've seen, but I haven't been back out there in a little while. Yeah. But it was pretty localized to Lamb Saddle, that spot above the trail, but in that same area.
Okay.
Yeah, beetles are just hanging out, waiting.
Yeah.
Always.
Lucky you don't have a black stain here. That's what Marty tells me, you guys don't have a black stain. We don't have a black stain here.
Not really. Yeah. Yeah, there are worse things.
Yeah.
Or Port River cedar disease.
Yeah.
Of course, they don't have Port River cedars, so. Yeah. Let's hope we never have sudden oak death to deal with.
Yeah.
That would be bad. That very bad.
Hey, it's too dry here.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to point out on city lands is as we're moving into the underburn season, I pull up here. I'm going to propose, and this affects parks too, and I've talked to Jason, he's talked to Michael Black. I'm going to start, you're like the test case here. You know, looking at a lot of the fires that have gone on around us in California, and certainly in thinking about community wildfire protection, we often are thinking about burning areas, you know, on the edges of town, which is certainly important. We have, I just mentioned that, Hoffman burn plan, which encompasses, zoom out on Ashland, which encompasses this area out here on the western flank of town. Really important because wildfire has come from that direction before, it will come from that direction again one of these days. All the major fires, except the Siskiyou Fire, have moved up slope, up canyon, this moving this direction. But not to discount the areas that are actually internal to the city and have houses all around them. And so if we read through history and look at what's happening in California, it seems to say that, you know, Santa Rosa is one example. Well, okay, fire blew from the edge of town into housing developments. A lot of embers blew into neighborhoods, lit houses on fire, those houses lit houses on fire, and then, you know, 3,000 houses later, entire neighborhoods are gone. Certainly these areas are susceptible that are internal to the city, and we've done a lot of piling and burning in places like Hald Strawberry Park, Acid Castle, Lithia, which has 52 acres of piles that are going to get burned anytime after March 1st. But we haven't gone in with underburning to consume a lot of the fine fuels that would drive a wildfire. So I'm going to propose that we get burn plans written for Hald Strawberry, Acid Castle, which encompasses all of this area, up to here and down into the Burns and Lawrence property, which is down in here. And this whole block here is really important for protecting Granite Street and the watershed below, as well as like Ashland Creek Estates, and eventually the new water treatment plant, which will be right here. So important pieces, and I think we tend to want to shy away from, oh, we're going to burn in neighborhoods and people don't like smoke. And yeah, but people also don't like wildfire in their backyard. And
especially when it's moving house to house.
Yeah, this is, and it's not, you know, it's one strategy. It's one tool in the toolbox. Yes, people managing their yards and their landscaping and their construction is really important. We work on that too. We still have a pending $3 million grant for that. But we also need to put this component in place. And I think if we went in there, the Prescribed Fire Training Exchange program that's been now will be in its fifth year is a good opportunity to be able to do that. It's great training. We could take Hald Strawberry, which is only 28 acres or something like that. It's not big. Break it down into small chunks. We can burn it manageably day by day. You know, take off 10 or 15 acres. I would propose that we actually burn it and then put it out, so that we don't get the smoldering that just annoys people and causes all kinds of problems. And you don't accomplish a lot of fuels reduction during the smoldering phase of fire anyway.
Just get the
FireWise communities involved to notify everybody. And
I already talked to Darren Borges about that.
It'll be fine.
His community is there. There's a lot of houses around that aren't part of a FireWise community. And we'll need to do outreach there, and we'll start to think about that. Certainly, like, the week leading up to it, we'd be doing a lot, including some door knocking.
Mm-hmm. So the goal would be to consume surface fuels and not to reduce the continuity of the canopy?
Yes. We've already done that through pile burning. In fact, this is probably pre-pile burn. Hard to say when this actual photo was taken. Map data 2020, imagery 2020, so maybe this is post.
That's 2020 imagery?
I don't see how that could be, because this is during, that's impossible. This is during the summer, so I can see cut grass. So it's 2019, I guess.
Okay, it's published.
You know what, we actually reduced a lot of this manzanita down, so
That's been thinned.
It's been thinned since this photo.
Okay.
But yeah, we would definitely not want to try to affect canopy with the kind of fire behavior that we would want out of this burn, which would just be very low flames. And it will inherently become a mosaic burn because there's areas that are going to green up and you can't really burn green grass. But under the canopy, there's a lot of oak leaf litter, pine litter, that'll carry fire just fine. But it will take an education push.
Well, and what a great education afterwards, too.
And afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to sound like Bernie Sanders here a little bit. It's really kind of bothersome to see how everybody's paying for the people who choose to build up in the place of danger. We have to pay more for more fire protection. Mm-hmm. I mean, just everything you pay more for. Sewer is more, because there's more distance of sewer line, city sewer line between houses. It just goes on and on. So we're subsidizing all these people so that, and then we have to protect their house from burning down when the fire comes.
I think that's overly simplistic. I don't think that's quite accurate, mm-hmm. because that could carry a fire to the plaza, that area.
Right.
I think you're hearing what I'm saying. You hear what I said?
What?
I'm just saying that in the macro picture, of course we have to do something now, but in the macro picture, the fact that our land use laws and the U.S. Constitution means that if it's private property, people can do what they want. And so people are building in these unsafe places, and they're continuing to build in unsafe places, and then we've got to pick up the pieces, and we got to protect them.
Are you saying, I would say all of Ashland is potentially unsafe under the right
That's not what I said.
Conditions.
No.
But no, I'm saying
when you go up into the woods.
Who's building in the, who are you specifying when you're saying you sound like Bernie Sanders and you're complaining about people in unsafe places?
No.
The people with houses that are surrounding that?
I shouldn't say that.
I just don't understand.
I'm saying that because it's like, hey, I'm one of the 99% and the 1% are up there in the woods building new houses that then have to be protected by everybody. And it's just...
But I don't think that treating that is just to protect the houses next to it.
I'm not arguing against any of the protection. All that protection is absolutely necessary because of the current conditions. But instead of us making the conditions better for the future, we continue to make them worse for the future by continuing to build up these areas, which means then you've got to do more protection up there.
Yeah, I think you're talking more just about land use. Yeah.
Zoning.
Which is certainly an issue elsewhere. I mean, all this is built out and has been for decades. But and there's not a lot of new construction going on in the forested areas inside the city.
It was actually Creek Lane or whatever. That's what made me think of that.
Yeah.
And that was...
There's certainly places that would...
That was a place that, that was 20 years ago, but mm-hmm. it wasn't that long ago. And that is really a very difficult place now to protect from fire.
I would not disagree.
Definitely.
With that.
And landslides.
Right.
In terms of the burn piles, that especially the ones that are near the neighborhoods, mm-hmm. Is there any concern about poison oak smoke or not?
Never had an issue with it. Mm-hmm. The stuff that gets in there dries out so fast, and they don't. Nobody tries to cut poison oak. I mean, in fact, they mostly leave it all alone.
There's not a lot in Hauled Strawberry. You might make the argument, and at least for the people who are managing the burn and working right there on the fire front, when live poison oak is burning and you're aerosolizing oils, that and you're standing right in the smoke and it's landing all over you, that's, some people have direct reactions to that. Unless we were burning fields of poison oak, I wouldn't expect that you would get the public exposure piece of it. It's really incidental. They're definitely not in the piles.
I was mostly thinking of upper lithium park.
Yeah. No. There's really no poison oak in that.
That's good because I walk there all the time. No, I don't worry.
That's going to be... I guess those two spots are both strategically really important. They're ready for burns. They have a high community protection value. Lithia Park would be in that same category, but we've got the piles to burn. We don't need to think about Lithia for another couple of years, I think. But I also would like to look at the Croson Reservoir parcel and do some walking through there and look at it. This is one area we could also burn with houses all around it. Maybe even part of this caudal piece here, too.
That's Red Queen
Trail? Yeah, right at the Red Queen trailhead there. So, fire ecology trail, we got to burn it.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris.
Can't talk about fire ecology.
Sort of, for what it's worth, maybe when you get to that point, I know that the city of Madison, Wisconsin, and Dane County Parks, they do a lot of burning.
Really?
Dane County, all through the county. But the city of Madison Parks, right in Madison. They do a lot, and it's very well accepted.
That's awesome. I did not know that about.
I was there a number of years ago for the Society for Ecological Restoration Conference, and there's burning going on. I was dumbfounded because... Yeah, I was still in Montana at the time, still pretty connected
to topography and fuels. And that, I mean, they're so used to it. If you're used to farms, you're used to burning. And I'm just saying, you just circle it and it just nukes.
The farms in Wisconsin don't burn.
Minnesota and Wisconsin.
All
the marshlands, they burn those for habitat and stuff. Right. But anyway, I'm just saying, you just circle it and it's done. Like with here, it's just totally different burning conditions.
This is not farmland that they're burning.
But I'm just saying, if you're used to seeing smoke in the air like that,
yeah,
it's a different mentality.
Yeah. Yes. Well,
plus the risk is way less.
I grew up there.
Yeah.
We didn't have burning.
In Madison.
Rick.
You started by saying that we're going to experiment, and I think what you're saying on Parks land in close to the houses, is that the experiment you're talking about?
I did not say experiment. This is not an experiment. We have 8 years of burning under our belt. We know how to do this. We've burned next to houses on city lands, so I want to push the envelope and get these done where they really need to be done and not shy away from them because they're by houses, but burn them because they're by houses.
Yeah, he's saying just come up with the specific burn plans for these units at that section.
But yeah, what we want to do is...
And I think you meant that you were trying the message out on us.
Just to get your reaction to the proposal. The technical part of it, we know how to do that. It's just a more like the community piece of it, like having fire in your backyard, where I can show you a couple houses we've burned in their backyards, and it's turned out fine.
I think your spin message was perfect, which is that we want to burn near houses because it's near houses. I think that's really good.
Good. Well, we'll try that out on the Joe voter and see if they're into it.
Well, I think you're also... you'll be able to point to where you did, like last time you were talking about burning the piles that were close to town.
Right.
So people will start getting the, the feel for what that feels like.
Yeah.
That, they're right back there.
Right.
Like what we talked about, like on the Waterline Road or
or up by on Ashland Loop.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
those
right.
kinds of places where there's, you know, you'll be doing those very soon, those piles that are already done. So
right.
that'll be a good thing to,
that will be a good thing.
Like, to point to and say, this really, it won't be that much different. You know, I mean, it's
right.
a different...
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
and, I think Hesperd's, you know, theme, you know, how do you want your smoke? How do you want your spire? You're going to get it one way or t'other. Do you want it? Do you want us to do it? Or do you want
yeah.
it to, you know, somebody else to do it on a hot, windy August day?
Proactive versus reactive.
Exactly. Yep.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, there you have it. Sorry,
Chris.
The extended
that was
good. Presentation.
That was good.
Didn't really plan that.
I appreciate the maps, too. That was cool.
Yeah.
All right, new business, illegal
right.
trails.
Trails.
Well, I brought this up last time, and I just wanted to, like, not to solve it right away, but to get it on our radar about illegal trails so that we can be, you know, responsible land managers. So I kind of just wrote down some notes that I thought, and just to see what you guys think about, you know, getting a handle on our illegal trails and having, you know, some way of inventorying them, some way of, some sort of criteria that we would say, yeah, this trail is, you know, we can make that a legal trail and adopt it into the system, or no, we would obliterate it and try to stop use or modify or something, but that we would establish, be proactive with the criteria so that it doesn't appear to be arbitrary. And none of this is my criticism of how it's been done. I think it's probably been fine the way it's done, but I thought it would be good to, like, be proactive and document it so that if somebody was curious or didn't like what we were doing, we would be able to say, well, here's our method, here's our process of inventory, of establishing criteria, of, like, you know, the criteria might be of, like, about, is this good for the user, is it good for hikers, is it good for mountain biking, you know, is it benefiting the resource, like, is it going somewhere where that's going to give us more visibility for those, you know, illegal camps, or is it, you know, putting sediment into, you know, a drainage? So those kinds of things that we would look at, and then I would think that, you know, once we got a handle on things, we would have some way of prioritizing, like, what, you know, what's, like, this is no big deal if it sits there for 5 more years, we can live with that, but this one, no, we want to get on it right away. And what would be our criteria for helping, like, Ashland Watershed decide where to put their volunteer crews to close down some of these trails once, you know, it was decided that they would be closed. So I just wanted to have a conversation about if we wanted to do that and, you know, how we would go about it. Would it be like an amendment to the master plan, or would it be like a part of the forest plan, or just in our notes? I don't know, or, you know, what would be best. And then I think we would also want to have some way of communicating with people so that people know when they're on a legal trail or when they're on an illegal trail, because, you know, it might look the same on the ground, but how would people know? And then, or, you know, at what point would we adopt them onto the map? So just some of those are some of the thoughts that I had about trails. And I just wanted to open that dialogue and see if other people thought it was something we would take on.
I think it's a bit of a slippery slope, and I think we've talked about it in the past, because as soon as you start officially talking about these things and naming illegal trails and posting them on maps and things, like, that's, it's really just going to potentially bring people to those trails.
They're already there.
Yeah, that are already there. Those, yeah, I guess a lot of those users are there, but, like, if you're like, oh, yeah, like, you know, if you could sign them, but I think the best thing is,
in which Jason should be here when we're talking about this because he's boots on the ground for the most part. Yeah. But
maybe they wouldn't be public maps.
Right.
I mean, not
right,
that
like working
secret,
that, right.
Working maps.
Yeah.
Right.
But they would be public. I mean.
Well, yeah, then it would have to be public right. that somebody would go and search out, but then they're searching out the map for illegal trails. They're not like looking at the Ashland Trail System map and going, oh, this ties in, I could go here. I mean, so that's part of the communication plan is how do you communicate what's what to let people know what's what. I don't know.
Is that even the right word, though, illegal? Is it unauthorized?
An appropriate name would be rogue.
Or
a lot
unauthorized.
Of, a lot of land managers.
Unauthorized, yeah.
Illegal suggests
right,
just trespassing
or something. Or that anyone who uses it is
yeah,
going to be arrested.
That's true. That's
so
probably not.
People caught digging new trails, that would be illegal.
Right, but the suggestion with illegal is that a user is breaking the law.
Right.
So
yeah, you're.
I mean, it's semantics, but still.
Yeah.
You're right. That's words. The words matter.
So unauthorized or user-created trail is the typical phraseology in transportation planning.
Yeah.
So didn't AFR map all of the unauthorized trails when it started? No, AFR doesn't do anything with recreation
or
so
Forest Service.
There's an accounting of unauthorized trails in, I think, across city and Forest Service, and which is often actually the trails are on private land. People just don't know where private land is. There's a lot of that out there. That is illegal because it's trespassing. So in some cases, yes, you're trespassing on people's property. The entire Moai Trail is trespassing on private property.
Yeah, except that the trail builder had authorization from the landowner, so.
I don't know, but there's
it was actually approached by the landowner to replace a trail that was taken out by some logging. Just for the record. Or off the record.
Sure. That's on the record. So yeah, there's a lot of trails in and out of private property, and some private property owners have no idea they're there, some others maybe have given permission.
Yeah.
And don't particularly care if the public's using them, and others probably
do. Probably. Yeah, so for starters,
and that would be another part of the another part of the
right.
equation of like, would the city care to keep track of that or go and advise those people? Like I was telling Chris about an example of. A trail that connects the canal, the ditch trail to the water line, and it's getting badly rutted, and it's Jason knows about it, but he says, well, it's on private land, so there's nothing we can do, but it's a resource problem. So would it be like a neighborly thing to do to advise that private landowner, or would we like organize a volunteer work party? Maybe they wouldn't mind, if we went in and put some water bars on it or something. Maybe, I don't know. So I just use that as an example of would we do anything about that?
Do we know how this is dealt with in the Trails Master Plan? Was there any discussion on illegal trails?
Yes.
So wouldn't that be a first place to go to see what's already approved by City Council? That's a good starting point.
We just approved the master plan.
So that would be my suggestion. If that's already approved and there's language in there on how we're dealing with unauthorized trails.
Go with that.
From a city perspective, some of the unauthorized trail concerns are things like wildlife, corrosion,
sure, that would fit here. But my point is, rather than start all over again,
this is
right. The ink is still wet on this stuff. Let's use that to start with.
I mean, we have talked about this a lot, really. So maybe that would be a good place to start is to say, does that, maybe that covers it. I don't know.
We have a couple of experts on the trail plan here, so.
Yeah, I didn't memorize it, so we could certainly pull it up and look at the part that talks about rogue trails, but unfortunately,
that'd be the beginning.
I didn't memorize it.
Sure.
Yeah, and then the question is, how do you prioritize those, and then what do you do about them?
Yeah.
Well, having recently finished a major travel management plan for a major national forest, you know, I mean, I'm a great one for plagiarizing. You know, there's all kinds of forms for, you know, assessing, you know, whether it's a motorized trail or a non-motorized trail in terms of resource impacts and usability and is it primary, secondary, tertiary uses, you know, all that stuff. I mean, that's where I would start is pull somebody else's, you know, questionnaire and say, okay, here's all the things that they thought about. And I'm sure not all of them would apply in our situation, and there may be some in our situation that that would apply that aren't on there, because this was for the Tonto National Forest. but the thing that's nice is, I mean, here's an example, you know, with 5,559 miles of roads, they've got, you know, over 10,000 pages of assessment by trail, you know, for each of these. And I mean, it's really useful when somebody says, well, how come this one is closed? I like this one. And you go back and say, well, here's why it's closed. It says here that this is a problem. Anyway, but it's just, it's a methodical way to go about something that I think kind of gets at what you're talking, Syl, of being able to say, yeah, we're not just being arbitrary. We had a reason for why this one was, you know, we adopted this one and we didn't adopt that one. Anyway, it's just an idea.
So, you know, and I don't mean to, like, bring up if it's a non-issue, if it's taken care of and that, and everybody's satisfied. You know, I'm fine. I raise a question.
It sounds like, as Frank brought up, it sounds like for you to review the Trails Master Plan and then seeing if you think there's still more that needs to be done.
Well, I'd be glad to do that, but not necessarily whether I think it's good enough. It would be, I could bring that back to the commission.
That would be really helpful, Kate.
You know, the other one to look at, too, you mentioned the travel.
With Frank's help, I'll do it.
Yeah, right. Rogue River Siskiyou did a travel management plan about 8 years ago, so that would be the other source document, because they were like, we're right here.
Yeah. But they were focused on motorized.
There were other aspects to it as well, but yeah, that was part of it.
Well, the Ashland Watershed Trails plan,
the thing Brian did.
2015.
So now we got not the travel management plan.
So we got three documents now that we can draw from.
I would think the Forest Service EA, the Trails EA would be a good one to look at, because they may have said we're at capacity or we're at our target, you know, density of trails, and so we wouldn't want to deviate from that if we're talking about trails on surrounding.
Right.
And see, that's one thing that, you know, Marty brings up is what kind of density do we want?
Yeah, just as a trail user and someone that volunteers with the WTA, it seems like the city and some of the trail groups might be pretty close to capacity for what they can sustainably maintain. So I would be a little hesitant to say, well, let's add some new trails here. These user-created ones seem like a good idea if we're just adding to like a maintenance backlog that already exists.
Right. Well, that's another thing to consider.
I heard him say that. I think mapping, we don't know the extent of the problem. Just getting an accurate mapping of what's out there would be pretty important. There is a layer that's not public of illegal, unauthorized, perhaps some illegal trails that are on private. And I can get a hold of that and just kind of fact check it with Jason and say, what do you think is out there? And some of it, we don't work on a lot of private land, so I don't know some of the trails that lead in and out of private and onto public. I discovered some the other day on Acid Castle as I was looking at fuels for burn planning, and some that I didn't even know about. One goes up to the rocks and down to the lower rocks on Acid Castle, which are really cool formations, and people have gone off of private property, off Pit Road, and gone in there, and there's all kinds of graffiti on the rocks on the lower side, which is really terrible to see. Trash. It's like, oh, that's a place where we probably don't want a trail leading to that section. You know, there's the upper Hit Road that you can go up and stand on the rocks from above. That has not turned out well. And then that trail keeps going onto the private property below it, where I would assume that owner probably does not want people. But there are other opportunities in that property for good trail connections, but it just hasn't been developed officially. So there may be some opportunities there where there are trails that need to be rerouted or cleaned up, made official.
So how about if, you know, to take it in manageable bites, I'll get out that master plan and for the next meeting bring that and we can go from there.
I'll get together with Jason.
Is that the acid castle borders?
I think that...
So you can't see
graffiti.
Graffiti's on the other side.
So I'll take a look at it too, because it might be important for the hike that we're going to do. So there may be some topics.
Okay.
So I'll take a look at that as well.
Okay.
That was the last agenda.
If you guys compile those digitally or something, just pass them to Chris so you can pass them too.
Okay. Yeah, I can compile a little packet for next time.
If we do like those three or something,
yeah,
just really.
Yeah, together. Maybe I'll like come into office or something a few days ahead of time to.
Yeah.
To pull that together.
Okay.
While I have the floor, I did have some, I guess if this would be commissioner comments.
Yep.
Or new business, or it's kind of old business.
Check it out.
Is I wanted to let you guys know about Art on Fire. I don't think I've talked to this group for a while. And I think I talked about, we did have, you know, we had a successful class, the city was awesome, the Forest Service was awesome, everybody stepped up. And then after that, I think in December or January, Ashland Fire and Rescue approached me and said, well, how about if we do the exhibit at the fire station? And I think when I... they had suggested it, but they still hadn't talked to the chief yet, so I couldn't tell you guys about that, but they talked to the chief, and the chief said, yeah. And so we're going to do it on, like, the first Friday in May, and in the lobby there, and the city's going to staff it, so it'll be, the lobby will be open in the evening on that first Friday in May, and then also... the AFR and Katie with the you know the WUI will have
Fire Adapted Communities.
Thank you. We'll have tables, so it'll be a good public outreach thing. Mm-hmm. And plus, so people have so since the class ended in early November. Since then, the artists have gone out and been very busy, and we have about 30 pieces of art that we can display.
Cool.
And, some of it's very good, some of it's amateur, some of it's fun. It's different. And so we're working to put that together. We have to find some panels to actually hang it on so it can be in the lobby and people can walk around and see it. And so the class has been, they've just been hanging in there. There's a woman that's like doing a kind of designing a posters and flyers for outreach, and we're talking about like an outreach plan to get the word out, which will coincide with getting the word out about the campaigns for the. With the Fire Adapted Community and like the April, May, June campaigns, we'll be able to talk about that there. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty exciting.
So will it be more than just that first Friday in May?
It'll go. That'll be the opening,
okay.
A gallery opening, exhibit opening, and then it'll run. I think we're talking about that it would run through to the for the month of May, and
nice.
Then the first Friday in June, although probably no more evenings. So the only evening would be that first, May 1st, is what.
I might be able to pull off the June 1st Friday as just a...
Yeah, well, I would be pleased as punch with, because
yeah,
that would,
I mean,
still be...
If it's going to
be
up that long, I might
have
to leave it up one more Friday.
But I think that at the time, you know, Katie and Sarah weren't ready to commit to that because of the, you know, keeping it open for the extra hours. But so, yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Well done.
Yeah, it's
cool.
It's fun. Yeah. So, yeah, so now we're kind of working on a logo and on a communication plan, and like we hope to like go and like get a little interview on JPR and stuff like that.
You already have a nice logo.
Yeah.
Use that one.
Yeah. So, that's what I have.
I have a comment.
Go for it, Frank.
This is the Down Under weather report. Sydney, Australia got 400 millimeters of rain in 72 hours, which is about 15 inches. And it's the most they've had in 30 years. 8 inches of rain fell in 24 hours. The fires aren't all out yet, but it's putting a real whammy.
Good.
On those, on the continent burning up.
And soils.
Goodbye,
well, yeah,
goodbye,
sure.
Soils.
Yeah, goodbye, soils is right.
Put the fire out first. We'll worry about the soils later.
Well, with that kind of rain, the soil dimensions just unbelievable.
They seem pretty happy about it.
Until they start getting landslides.
That's terrible. It's back to an average year then, right?
Something like that. Average.
Are there other items on the agenda?
No, we'd be done.
I've got one more.
Yep.
So, as Syl mentioned, we do have the Wildfire Safety Commission is again the second year going to launch its campaign on wildfire safety, starting in April, May, and June. So that'll be coming up, and as we get more details, we'll share that with you guys.
Yeah, and there's like a different theme for each.
For each month.
Each month.
And it goes through June?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
So you mentioned Australia. This is kind of a little interesting factoid that I learned when I was doing the research for my little art on fire class. There's these hawks, Australian fire hawks, that they're attracted to the smoke and fire. And then I will actually fly into a fire and pick up burning sticks and fly them and take them elsewhere.
Really?
And start fires. And so in some of the pictures that I was seeing, you could see like these hawks like swirling around in the fire isn't that wild?
Yeah.
What kind of attitude?
We need to bring them here, then we wouldn't need lone cotsies.
No, we do not let them here.
No, ascends the mice running.
Yeah, pretty wild, like the aboriginal.
Nothing smokes the little critter.
Sitting around the campfire, and a hawk will fly in, pick up a stick, and take it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's good. Okay. All right, so I think that's a resolved mission. I don't want to stick around and chat for sure, but meeting adjourned.
Very
good.
Yeah. Good. Good job.
Wow. Surely nice. Firehawks, huh? That's amazing. I want to see a picture of that.
Yeah. I'm going to look at this video. With the National Geographic article that I found about it. Yeah?
Thank you.
I know, there was like a...